things happen to people who listen to radio.
Once we understand the bug, we will defeat it.
Are you ready for
The only good bug is a dead bug.
Shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs.
Some say that a live and let live policy is preferable to war with the bugs.
I say kill them all.
Yeah.
Put it on and leave it on.
Welcome to Bug Radio. Still no pub, I'm afraid. This week we're talking bees, butlers and bookcases. Can you still get laid on a lockdown? Find out in a bit. We'll also be hearing the worst excuses ever for leaving your house. To prop up the bug chinwag, I'm joined by the laureate of Longland Crescent, Mr. Kieran Monks Kaufman. It's just shit now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great. And it's sort of worse for the sense that it might be about to end soon, because occasionally they give you these little glimmers of light. And you see in other countries, you know, where people are hugging their grandmothers and having a coffee on the street, and you think, well, hell, maybe that's imminent. And then that makes the incarceration that much harder to bear. But, you know, I'm still going. Got a new bike this week. Oh, it doesn't work. I sent my first threatening legal letter to this company called Footbox. More on them later. And a bit of respect to one of our listeners who's taken up goat rearing. This is not easy, so don't try this at home. This guy is you know, very shrewd, very sharp, understands about, you know, the milking procedures, the measuring of horns, you know, whatever is necessary to goat rearing. So a lot of respect there. And also a lot of respect to our magnificent hosts at Threads Radio. That's threadsradio.com, where you can hear this and a lot of interesting sounds and thoughts. And follow us on Bug Radio 2020 on both the Twits and Instagram.
Radio. So yesterday, the sun, happy Monday. Go out to exercise all you like, sit in the park 2 meters from your pals. Pubs, cafes plan to open gardens. Lockdown will be eased next week. Daily Express, first steps to freedom from Monday. Daily Mirror, 5 steps to end of lockdown. Daily Mail, hurrah, lockdown freedom beckons. Daily Star, Magic Monday. So that doesn't seem to have lasted very long, because today, The Times, PM to keep Britain in lockdown until June. What's going on?
It seems like constructive ambiguity, because they must have had a sense that when they were briefing all their friendly hacks that this new phase was upon us, that they would then splash that across their front pages. And now seem to be sort of feigning horror that that's exactly what's happened. Obviously, a lot of people are going to hear the first point louder than the second mealy-mouthed caveats. So, yippee, we're down the shore, we're going fishing, we're going to Ibiza. The good times, let them roll.
Well, as we mentioned, the Prime Minister will make a statement on Sunday on his plans to ease the lockdown, measures that he says will come into force the next day.
We've got this problem that because Number 10 fucked it up so badly at the beginning, we're going to be a lot longer in lockdown than other countries who maybe stepped on it a bit more. So it could have been that they thought, is there a way that we can keep people in lockdown but use our power to gaslight people in the papers to make them feel as if we're not in lockdown? But the trouble is, if you've just had this massive U-turn, surely it just makes it worse rather than better.
We were never as severe on the lockdown as a lot of other places are. And, you know, that's come with what looks like a very high toll.
Yeah.
And given that there's a lot of pressure from very rich people to start business up again, it's clear. I mean, if you look at all the sort of Telegraph columnists, you need to turn the money tap back on. But obviously it would look bad to just suddenly, like, disregard safety at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I suspect that they want to create enough ambiguity that people then hear the first message that they are now more free. And then if that comes with, you know, severe casualties, then the government can say, look at the second message. We didn't actually want them to do that.
So the effect the first lockdown had on the financial markets was unbelievable. If we try and relax things now, and then there's a second spike, and then we have to bring everybody even harder into lockdown afterwards, what the fuck is going to happen then? We would be in completely uncharted territory then.
I think it's a genie in a bottle situation. I think lockdown is the sort of thing you can only really pull off effectively once. And then once you start easing it, you can't undo that. It can only go in one way. And once people have had a little taste of freedom, they can't go back in their boxes.
So once that's happened, it's just like let the chips fall where they may, and that's it.
I suspect it's only going to go in one direction from now, almost irrespective of the health impacts. And you won't be able to get that sort of quite impressive level of discipline that was achieved for a spell, albeit much less discipline than was seen elsewhere in Europe where they were a bit more maybe heavy-handed about it, but also perhaps, you know, there was more support for people. And also you've had Sunak saying that they want to sort of cut the furlough subsidies. So you're going to be putting people in positions where more and more people basically can't afford to stay in their place any longer. So
do you not think that part of me kind of thinks there's going to be two different factions here? There's going to be one part of the population who is scared shitless of the bug and so is going to stay at home anyway and possibly could afford to stay at home. They might be able to work at home or they might have savings or whatever. And then there's going to be another group of people who probably tend to be poorer who are either going to feel like they have no choice but to go out, bug or no bug, or they're going to be people who just, you know, they're not personally affected by it. They don't have family members who are affected by it. So they're just going to go out anyway. I still don't see how you can really get the economy going anyway. Even if you were to order everybody back out to the pub, you're still going to have about half the country who are just not going to go.
Well, it's all going to be very sort of half-assed and confused and shambolic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that seems like a safe bet. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not going to be entirely clear who's responsible for what. There's going to be people yelling at each other out of their windows. You know, a lot of bucks getting passed around. It's clear that at a time when we appear to have handled this as badly as anyone in Europe, that there's no useful or solid leadership materializing now or anytime soon. So new feature of this show, we're just going to look at some of the papers that aren't always looked at, see their angles. So first off, people might be familiar with the Sunday Sport. And like, for instance, Playboy, it's known as a sort of smut rag. But this belies the quality of some of the journalism. So their take by Brad Chadwick in Seoul, did Joe Wicks kill Kim Jong-un?
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to day number one of my PE with Joe, a 30-minute workout every single day, Monday to Friday.
They speculate that Kim Jong-un's wife, who may now be lined up to replace him, I'm not all that familiar with the sort of succession rules. But anyway, he's fine now. So she was saying that he is out of shape and people aren't going to respect his leadership as much. So he needed to get online and do what so many of us are doing to try and kind of keep it together during this phase and follow Joe Wicks's YouTube workout sessions. One source said he lasted about a minute before slumping to the ground. And so the speculation is that this rumored heart attack of Kim Jong-un was caused by taking part in a Joe Wicks workout session. How do we feel about that? I mean, so obviously he has survived, but is, I suppose, as good an explanation as any for why he seemed to be in trouble for a bit, that he'd sustained an injury whilst working out to Joe Wicks, because we know that Joe Wicks' sessions are vigorous. You know, a lot of people have come to grief.
But now, can you get to the ceiling? Boy, I'm a kangaroo, get up! Get up there!
This might be fake news, but I've been led to understand that the dictator of North Korea prefers to play computer games and chain smoke. That's his thing, isn't it?
Okay, but I mean, that would then hang together that, you know, he obviously would have been in bad shape. And I think it's not being rude to say that Kim Jong-un is in bad shape.
Yeah.
So it's plausible that he was then sort of given a kick in the ass and told, you know, shape up.
Well, I don't know, because I thought the whole idea of being the dictator was that people are probably quite sort of apprehensive about giving you, you know, a kick up the arse.
Yeah, but this was his wife. So, I mean, presumably she's got some additional leverage.
I mean, I didn't see a quote from his wife.
Well, I'm just sort of zooming in here. She nagged. Well, that's pretty sexist. His wife, Ri So-ju, nagged him that he was out of shape and in no state to rule a country. Eventually, Kim decided to follow Joe Wicks on YouTube. So, I mean, it checks out to me. I mean, that seems like a legit story. I mean, if people are going to give the Daily Telegraph respect for that scoop about, what's his name, Ferguson,
yeah,
then you've got to hand it to the Sunday Sport for coming up with this, you know, pretty plausible explanation for what went wrong with Kim Jong-un. And I'm seeing there's actually an editorial as well saying, thank Keep Fit Joe for working Kim to death.
And then health boffins, well, what the Sunday Sport calls health boffins, have been forced to issue coronavirus orgy guidelines after footage emerged of sex people cutting holes in hazmat suits so they could still bang during the crisis.
I was in Epping Forest with a girlfriend. Next thing I know, there was like half a dozen blokes standing around the car, and I thought, like, what's this? It just sort of went on from there.
So, I mean, that's quite heartwarming, isn't it, in a way, because they're sort of standing up to the bug and You know, either way, they're going to do their thing.
Oh, yeah, I suppose it's people refusing to be cowed. And so moving on to the Fortean Times, a much-respected journal of the supernatural, dealing with rogue sightings of alien big cats, which apparently continue to haunt European forests and meadows. Sightings have been made all over the border region the Czech Republic shares with Poland and Germany. A big cat of an unidentified species was spotted in the Polish woods. Hunters informed police, who arrived with tranquilizer guns, but the cat escaped. So that's the last thing we need, isn't it? I mean, people have been talking about murder hornets. And apparently now we're also being afflicted with a sort of deluge of panthers.
Did you see that video of the murder hornets, by the way?
What about how it can be defeated by the Japanese bees?
Yeah, it was really bad because it kind of grabbed one of them and it started eating it. It was a bit weird. It was like a kind of delayed response because all the rest of them, I mean, there were three that were just wandering around in front of him. I don't know what they thought was going to happen. But then all the rest of them kind of took about 5 or 6 seconds and they just thought, right, well, we're not having that. And they just absolutely rushed him.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's been a lot of alarmism about the murder hornet. And
they're big fuckers. We've seen how big they are. They're about 4 centimetres long. If one of them came in through my window, I might just kill myself just to avoid having to deal with it.
Well, it might not even give you that option. I mean, I suppose it depends how many there were. But nonetheless, a very alarming tale. But then, as you say, in some places, the bees have evolved to be able to return fire.
Yeah, I mean, so long as there's enough of them. Yeah.
But that's in Asia where they're habituated to the murder hornets. So we would be totally defenseless.
Aren't there reports of them being in America?
Well, yeah, I think that was the big concern because, you know, bee populations have been vulnerable there as well. So if these bastard things just come in and massacre all the bees, then, you know, not only are the bees in trouble, but obviously we rely on them.
Do they breed as quickly as the bees? I mean, there's a lot of bees, aren't there? Actually, no, there's lots of people who are... In fact, the Neil Ferguson lady is apparently a bee campaigner who presumably campaigns on the basis that there aren't enough bees.
Oh, yeah? So what, is this a move? So the Telegraph, obviously they've got an interest in taking out chief scientific experts who are...
Pro-lockdown.
Yeah, pro-lockdown. And, you know, the Telegraph likes this idea of opening up the economy. I mean, if you look at their opinion section, it's a lot of cantankerous oaths saying, you know, what's everybody complaining about?
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think the Barclay brothers, you'd bet someone a fiver that they're probably long the stock market, aren't they? So they quite want to get stuff going again.
Yeah. So, I mean, so obviously they've got an interest in taking out Ferguson, but maybe also, maybe there's some sort of murder hornet lobby that is also interested in taking out this pro-bee campaigner. Who might want defences for bees against the advance of the murder hornet.
Well, I mean, maybe if somebody could release some murder hornets inside the Telegraph offices.
And just to round up this paper review, I want to talk a bit about the modern butler's journal.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a great qualification for being a butler is being unflappable, that, you know, when crisis hits, you keep it together.
That's right.
The Butler. Once an integral part of any self-respecting English upper-class home. Someone who symbolized the image of service, of a time gone by. A world where people knew their place, and when serving others was a privilege and a vocation.
And so Amer Vargas, in the latest May edition, so this is now a couple of months into the plague era, he's saying, let's talk about the strawberry sake cocktail, which apparently is very well suited to our times. It sort of transports you. It takes you away. And he's saying that you do that with some super premium sake, a teaspoon of yuzu juice, mm-hmm. Fresh strawberries, and some white sugar. And this looks like an absolutely delicious concoction. So Amer Vargas, clearly an asset to whatever household he is butlering.
I take it he stopped short of suggesting that it cures coronavirus.
He's not making that suggestion. But I suppose all the people right now, anyone, any listeners with butlers, you know, appreciate them because obviously they're putting in work trying to...
They're taking a risk. They don't know where you've been.
Yeah, and they're trying to maintain the lifestyle to which you're accustomed. So, I mean, imagine like Elon Musk, say, he's probably got a butler, you know, while he's coming up with ridiculous names for his children.
Is it like a half a robot child? It's a real child, is it? It's not a cyborg child.
Well, I mean... My sources are unreliable on this, but I am confident that Elon Musk has got a butler and that the butler will be doing, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting with childcare.
Yeah.
And probably a lot of other domestic staff. So I think it's important to highlight the ingenuity of those people. And another charming letter to the editor talks about the butler's role in Batman and how you have that role where you're simultaneously in the family but not. So you've got to maintain like the warmth but also the distance.
Cold.
It's a fishy swear, sir. It's supposed to be cold.
So, you know, that's very touching. And I suppose it's interesting he mentions Batman as well, because I've been wondering how this whole thing is going to affect Batman and the whole Batman franchise, because, you know, along with the pangolins, the bat is on the hook, really, for the crime of disseminating the bug. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So how are they going to say, oh, brilliant, we'll just send this Batman out to solve everyone's problems, when it's more the opposite?
Is it really the bat's fault? Isn't it more that, assuming that Mike Pompeo is talking rubbish, and that this did originate in a wet market, isn't the problem that the bats were kept in too close proximity to other animals, which they wouldn't normally be in that close proximity to?
I mean, on Bug Radio, we've held off pangolin shaming. I mean, I don't think we're going to say that these creatures that were imprisoned, you know, either through the malice of their hunters or their own incompetence.
Yeah.
I don't think we're saying that they're really responsible.
No, I'm not going to throw pangolins under the bus. I've always had a bit of a soft spot for them. I've always thought they were quite dignified.
Agreed, yeah. But so, I mean, as far as the Batman franchise goes, I mean, the suits must be worried. They must be thinking, like, because a lot of kids growing up now are going to be traumatized. So how are we going to market this thing that's so associated with the source of their trauma?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I mean, bats have always been associated with the night, with mystery and, you know, don't go out after dark or whatever. And that's kind of the appeal of Batman anyway, isn't it?
Well, that he goes out at night. I think it's more, it's like he's, you know, he's a hard man.
No, absolutely. But the appeal of using the bat is that the bat generally confers some sort of mystery. So I think that still holds. If anything, the notoriety is bullish for Batman, I would have thought.
Maybe. So yeah, he's distinguished from the Spider-Man, the Superman.
There's probably a scope for a few, you know, cheap little sort of coronavirus-based jokes in the next film, I would have thought.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't want to put me in a market.
Yeah.
In the previous episode, we talked about how sometimes there's a good reason why people appear to be not following the rules. So, you know, people that don't really have a safe or comfortable place to live, say, like people who need to preserve their mental health. But also, there are bad excuses for violating the lockdown with no proper justification. So we want to talk about some of those. And first up, Farage.
Yeah, he popped up for a quick racist.
Are you sure it's not popping up to do a racism?
Oh, maybe. Maybe it is.
Yeah, I think I saw something like that. Someone was like, you can do your shopping, you can, you know, do life-saving surgery, but you can't just nip out to Dover and do a racism and expect to not to hear about it.
Do you think maybe he senses an opportunity now that Boris has had to say nice things about immigrant nurses or whatever? So he thinks, you know, maybe there might be a new gap in the market for, you know, some good kind of old-fashioned racism.
So what was Farage's angle anyway? That he was just going to go to Dover and just sort of yell at boats?
It's Monday morning, I'm here in Dover, and that's because I'm not going to let this story drop. Lots of press reports over the weekend suggesting I was quite wrong to have gone to East Sussex last week. This is a scandal. It's continuing. Somewhere out there in the Channel, what's happening is that our border forces, who are meant to protect our borders, have picked up some illegal migrants who will now be ferried into Dover. So for us now, it's just a waiting game.
I mean, he's not an idiot, is he? This is the trouble with him. Like, if he was an idiot, I'd think, fine. But he's not an idiot. He's a deeply calculating politician. He thinks there's hay in this.
But nonetheless, good to see that he did get his collar felt by political correctness gone mad, and hopefully they can find some pretext to hurl him down a well, or perhaps off the cliffs of Dover, into the ocean.
That really would be the way to go, wouldn't it, for Big Nige?
Hopefully that'll be the last for a bit. And then on another part of the spectrum, Extinction Rebellion, who some people give a hard time to for occasionally sort of
being a bit posh.
Well, or perceived naivety. Yeah. So they went from tremendous popularity.
They just display a certain kind of tin ear.
There was perhaps the odd ill-considered action, like that one that was like standing on the tubes at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And a lot of sort of working class commuters getting very pissed off.
Yeah.
So what they've done now is a protest at Euston against HS2. And so they've taken some heat over this.
Yeah, I saw that there's like four of them there or something.
Saying like defund HS2. But I don't know. I mean, do we want to say that protesting shouldn't be allowed anymore? I mean, there were some very interesting looking protests in Israel with all the demonstrators in Rabin Square.
Do you want me to let you into a little secret?
Go on.
I support protests which are protesting for things that I agree with.
But what about during a plague? Because in America, the demonstrations outside courthouses and with all the militias with heavy weaponry.
Yeah, wankers, hang them.
Yeah, but, you know, are protests cool now? Or do you have to do like a really kind of thought out, distanced protest? And if so...
Well, I don't know, because basically the only people who are, other than Extinction Rebellion, it's mainly only right-wing people who are protesting. Because most left-wing people seem to be basically pro-lockdown. And so they're doing most of their agitating on social media. The only people who are turning up with AK-47s at courthouses in Michigan, they're not going to be Bernie fans, are they?
No, but I mean, there is no doubt still a lot of shady things to be opposed. So, you know, in theory, people on any given issue, whether it's environmentalism or health or, you know, any issue, you still need to be, you know, exercising that freedom. Otherwise, stuff could get past you. And beyond Farage, other... slightly dubious justifications. Driving to Devon to reminisce. A pair of motorbikers were caught in Devon, just sort of stopping to reminisce of times past. And they've both been fined and directed to leave Devon.
There's a list of excuses that certain members of the public have offered to police, apparently. They kind of get better as they go through. So I've been to buy nail clippers for the dog. My son is a rubbish cook, so I take him food every day. I'm taking my quad bike for a walk, and I promise I'm not going to ride it around a field. I've just been to feed the fish. My favourite one, I don't watch the news, what's going on? I'm taking my mate into Newport to buy drugs. And last but not least, I thought I heard someone maybe in trouble, so I came to have a look, but I don't know their name or remember the person who told me it.
Yeah, the one about not knowing what's going on is good.
I mean, that is just genius. Because it is possible.
Yeah, I suppose if you just listen to, you know, certain music stations and, you know, stayed out of... I mean, you just think that people were just enjoying masks, that masks were just having a moment.
No, but if you'd been out of your house at all over the last 5 or 6 weeks... It would take an unusual level of kind of vacancy to not twig that something of some sort was going on.
I mean, you just sort of wander up the road and think, well, a lot of people must have had a heavy night last night.
Every night.
Yeah, and then you get on the train and you think, wow, I've got a seat. You just sort of be like, oh, it seems to have been, you know, like a real run on tinned tomatoes in this store. And I guess there must have been a robbery here because the man at the till was behind some sort of polythene layer.
I'd be interested to know whether the guy who said it was taking the piss or whether he genuinely thought that that would fly.
And just a couple more. Pair from Bristol stopped by police 140 miles away from their house because they wanted to look at a puppy. They were going to check out a puppy and see if it was right for them.
Looking at puppies, it does make you happy.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. BMW driver drove 170 miles for break from kids.
Well, we haven't met his kids, have we?
Yeah, but he would be ultimately, if they're bad kids, that's probably his fault too. So we're not too censorious, but obviously a lot of those cases we just mentioned, people need to do better than that.
Put it on and leave it on.
Bookshelves. People are interested in this because you can't go peacocking as much as you used to. How do you show off now? You know, you can't stroll into the club with some astonishing aftershave kind of vibe around you. About the best thing you can do is have a very striking bookshelf with lots of good titles
that you can be interviewed in front of on television.
Yeah, and I guess this is kind of an arms race because probably a few people did it casually and then probably some other ones, like, I don't know, Tom Newton, Don of the Sun, would have been like, well, I need to have one of those. And
yeah, they're like the sort of bowerbird that collects beetle wing cases to sort of show off to the female birds.
Yeah, it's the way you display your virility, your intellect.
There's a bit of a row about Michael Gove, wasn't there?
Yeah, that was a bit empty, really. I mean, it's in, like... Well, no, I suppose it's totally legit to have terrible literature, you know, even like from the darkest political traditions, because it would be an irony if you were trying to legislate against those dark traditions by, you know, banning any form of literature, because it would evoke those traditions.
Sarah Vine, who's Michael Gove's wife, posted a picture of one of their many bookcases that contained a book by the notorious Holocaust denier David Irving.
Yeah, there was this other one from an author with Arctos Media, which is associated with the alt-right. They published works by the benefactor of Generation Identity. So it's a very niche publishing house that only really does fascist literature. And so it wouldn't have the same sort of justifications that you'd have for, you know, a scumbag, albeit a heavyweight scumbag, such as David Irving.
Yeah, so Sarah Vine's argument basically, well, the way that she defended herself on Twitter basically was that if you want to fight prejudice, you need to understand it. I mean, I got hold of a copy of Mein Kampf once when I was in a laundrette, and there were only two books in the laundrette, and my phone had run out of battery. One of them was an autobiography by the English rugby captain and national treasure, Rob Andrew. And the other one was Mein Kampf.
Also by Rob Andrew.
No, this was the, you know, the real deal. You know, and I was just a bit so curious. I just sort of picked it up and thumbed. I mean, it's, you know, duff read. But, you know, you sometimes just want to pick up a book, no matter how horrible it is, just because you know that it's had a horrible effect on the world. And you're sort of wondering, you know, how it could have had that effect, you know.
I don't think there's any debate there. I think if you want to study history, you're going to have to study some shitbags. So for me, the more interesting thing is how well suited is a bookshelf as a window to the soul? I mean, can you really peacock with a bookshelf? So if you're on a call with some people, I mean, my old man told me before I went to university that to be taken seriously, you've got to have Noam Chomsky's Manufacturing Consent on your bookshelf. I mean, you don't have to read it, but otherwise people will think you're a lightweight. Once they see it, they're like, "Oh, I'm dealing with an intellectual." And
it's almost a bit like a list of all the different sexual positions you've tried. You know, I've read Hitler. I've read, I can't really think of anybody else.
You can't think of anybody but Hitler. All right, Livingstone.
It's. I mean, the thing is, it's a way of, you know, showing where you've been mentally.
I mean, if you were doing, like, so the Fantasy Football League is shut down, obviously, but what about, you know, the Fantasy Book League? I mean, if you could get your sort of top 11 books to, like, really, you know, say you had something that was, like, simultaneously, you know, a job interview and a date and also, like, presenting Bug Radio live at Wembley Stadium from your bedroom. I mean, you'd have to put on some dense philosophy, but also maybe you'd have like a photography book to show your range and, you know, a couple of good novels probably from the like Beat era.
Yeah, I mean, my bookshelf in my bedroom, there are, you know, quite a lot of slightly embarrassing things. I mean, there's probably about 20 or 25 books about the financial markets. So that's not particularly attractive.
It's distinctive though, because maybe the last thing you want to do with a bookshelf is not like clothes or hair or whatever, where you can just do what everyone else is doing. If you've just copied everyone else's bookshelf, then you've defeated the whole point of peacocking with your bookshelf.
One guy who fell foul of this, well, at least according to the internet, is Martin Lewis of moneysavingexpert.com, which is a great British institution, but doesn't really have such a great bookcase. So sort of a black IKEA type thing, but it's kind of set into the wall. And what there is on it is about three of his own books, and there's about five or six copies of each of his own books. And then there's a copy of Who's Who in 2010, a few fantasy novels, about four or five fantasy novels, a load of his awards on the top shelf, and a Scrabble dictionary. I mean, he could have had people cooking meth in the background and he would have come away with more gravitas, I think. But, you know, as I say, a great guy.
Have you seen, like, any really outstanding bookshelves? What do you look for in a bookshelf?
I guess the best ones are just the biggest ones.
Yeah, I suppose you want something solid oak, something that looks substantial.
Yeah.
You know, and then the books, I mean, I want separation. I want books with maybe a little, you know, ornament every now and again where you're not just sort of trying to sort of pack them in.
Yeah. The thing that really fucks me up is people who color code, who arrange their books into the different spine colors. I think those people should just be put out of their misery with lethal injection.
I'm embroiled in a tussle with an unscrupulous text subscription service called Footbox, where they claim that I signed up somehow, and it's like not a service, it's a website that's got some pictures of footballers, not even recent footballers like Carlos Tevez. And so they send me a text every week saying like, "We are Footbox," but it's like to a defunct number. And so they've been doing this for months and months. Long story short, they've managed to steal £200.
So you never knowingly signed up for it?
No. And so they're like, "Well, you know, we can't really deal with this, there's a plague on. You know, we're just practicing self-care," and offered me some sort of derisory compensation. So I'm embroiled in this to the death with Footbox. I won't stop at unleashing murder hornets in their vicinity. But it's very much ongoing. You know, it's been a couple of weeks now. But Footbox, if you're listening, this is not over.
Yeah, let us know how you get on. We can have a little kind of watchdog section.
Yeah. If anyone else is getting shafted by Footbox, let us know, because they are bastards.
One of the nice things about the bug is the effect that it's had on what you might call Airbnb playboys. So I was listening to quite a well-known but incredibly irritating podcast this morning, which will remain nameless.
It's not Bug Radio.
No, they were drawing attention to the plight, the fucking plight, ladies and gentlemen, of people who had borrowed a lot of money, basically, and built up a precariously leveraged property empire through the Airbnb platform, which is obviously sitting idle. I mean, fucking hallelujah. There's a particularly grating sort of Orwellian language that's built up around these sorts of businesses. They call themselves the sharing economy. Have you heard this phrase before?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I mean, what the fuck are you sharing? It's an unregulated hotel business and a get-rich-quick scheme for people with massive inheritances. And it just jacks up house prices to the point when the locals can't afford to live there anymore.
I suppose you're sharing the opportunity to make them wealthy.
Barcelona is fucked off of Airbnb. Like, I mean, that's quite an extreme example, but large areas of Barcelona where if you grew up there, you can't live there anymore. So we're saying fuck Airbnb, no?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, if there was a one house limit, yeah, so you could go on holiday and rent out your gaff while you're away, so you could stay away for a bit longer, you know, or have a few more daiquiris on the terrace. Fine. If you've got 10 Airbnbs, you're a prick.
So we now think that they're up shit creek, is that correct?
Well, if these people have borrowed a whole load of money, because quite a lot of the time, these people don't actually own these properties. They're renting them out at a commercial rate, but then they're subletting them on Airbnb. A lot of these places, you go in them and you can tell that no one lives here because there's just like weird kind of IKEA art all over the place. There's like a coffee machine.
Yeah, no, it's very sinister enterprise, people producing these empires. I also want to condemn myself, who somehow allowed myself to rent my place while I was abroad on Airbnb. So down with me.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like I said, if there was a one house limit, so you can go on holiday and you can rent out your house while you're on holiday.
And through doing that, I learned that there are people who curate Airbnb listings and to how to make them more attractive. And that's things like put a bottle of champagne on the table. You just sort of chuck some flowers on the floor. So, you know, people are simple.
One day I'd quite like to be able to buy a flat. This is just artificially jacking up the price of all these houses in all these major cities. If even one of these people gets so much as a tenner of a bailout, I'm joining the anarchist black bloc tomorrow morning. Radio, the best station.
Seeing as how we've had Ferguson and his lover, what's her name? Stats? Madame Stats and Ferguson, who are now in the doghouse and can no longer advise on either beekeeping, epidemiology, exponential growth curves, anything like that.
Well, I suppose they can have loads of sex in the doghouse, though.
Yep.
So there is that.
They might as well now. Such is their low repute. But I've read that people are still dating and apparently in quite a sort of cerebral way, because people can't do hookup culture anymore, they'll just sort of have, like, you know, developed conversations with people, the sort of human in-depth interactions of the kind that maybe, you know, weren't so associated with some of the popular apps.
And what do you think this is going to lend a certain depth to dating which it perhaps lacked?
I mean, there must be some people, and if you're in this situation again, do email us at bugradio2020.
Yeah, if you've had any interesting dates, get in touch.
Well, or how, if you've gone from a very busy type of data to somebody who's had to slow it down a bit, you know, tell us about how you're adapting to that, because I gather that in some cases people are just sort of, you know, developing quite an in-depth relationship and understanding that they might not have had otherwise. I mean, I read stories from Italy about how sort of people who define themselves as serial lady killers would then just suddenly become far more emotionally involved, and they would talk to people at length, and they would develop, you know, a much more of an interest in one another than would normally happen. So, I mean, you know, you've got to hand it to the plague.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't particularly like people, so this doesn't really apply to me.
But now there's no pressure. Now people can just sort of, you know, there was no immediate prospect of seeing someone. So people that might ordinarily misrepresent themselves somewhat, be like, you know, I'm 7 foot tall and I own some tigers, might now just be like, you know, I'm timid and sensitive.
Wait, so you think that's the new currency in the plague era?
Well, no, I just mean people that maybe prefer shallower relations don't really have that option now. And I mean, I think we've already covered how it's impossible really to have shallow discussions in the plague era, because...
But wouldn't those people just start a kind of muscle channel or something? That's how I reckon people like that would go.
Well, yeah, no doubt many leopards won't change their spots, but just from some of the touching accounts I've heard, a lot of people are discovering another side to themselves and having a more sort of three-dimensional dating experience. And then I suppose if you've had a sort of basically long distance text only relationship for a few months, it would be potentially then very exciting when you actually did get to see someone. You know, Lord knows there'll be some times when this lifts to some extent.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to call us pricks, you can do that on Twitter at BugRadio2020. And if 250 characters isn't sufficient for you to express your contempt, you can email us on BugRadio2020@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Now wash your hands and piss off.